The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
When you turn on the evening news, do you see what you want to see or what you need to see? Welcome to Bread for the Journey, ordinary people doing extraordinary deeds with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. It seems like more often than not, the good news and people that are making it are buried into a two-minute feature piece near the end of the report. What about giving these people and this kind of news a full hour every week? Now, here's your host, Mariana Cacciatore.
Good morning. This is Mariana Cacciatore on Bread for the Journey Radio. In a few minutes, we'll be speaking with Katie Pearson, founder of Tabitha Farm Urban Homestead and Community Garden in Kalamazoo, Michigan. Our Bread for the Journey chapter in Kalamazoo had given Katie a grant and also invited her to do a presentation for us at our annual retreat. And everyone in the room was captivated by Katie's exuberance and love for the work she was doing. And that we talked about it for the remaining 2 days. We were all together. So I thought she might be a fun person to introduce to you, our listeners. So I'll bring her on in a few minutes. But first, I'd like to tell you a little bit about Bread for the Journey. Bread for the Journey Radio is a program of Bread for the Journey International. And what we are is an international program that has volunteer-run chapters in cities all around the country. A group of people will come to me in a certain community and say they want to do something to make a difference in their community. And so we give them a nonprofit status with the IRS, and we teach them how to start a small nonprofit. And together, the small group of people who could be longtime friends or new acquaintances will raise a little bit of money and pool it together from family, friends, colleagues. It doesn't have to be much, $1,000, $2,000. And then they find people in the community who are doing things to make the community more healthy or beautiful or just, and they give it away with no strings attached. We don't even allow written grant proposals. We're very relationship-based. When somebody comes to us for a grant, we'll meet them for a cup of tea or perhaps have a meal with them and have a conversation. And if the fit is right, then a small micro-grant is given. Sometimes the grants are a couple of $100s. Sometimes they're $1,500 or $2,000. It really depends on how much money the chapter has at the time or what the need is for the nonprofit that is reaching out. And I will mention, I said nonprofit, but sometimes they're just individual people, like a teacher doesn't have a nonprofit organization but wants to do something with 10 kids over the summer with, that involves the craft that they're teaching, and they need $1,000 or $1,500 to make the project swing. So we're free to give to them as well. And we give grants in the areas, I mean, all over the board. We feel like a community needs all kinds of things to be a healthy community. So we give in so we don't put limitations. We give in arts, education, environment, children and youth, elders. It's just a formalized way of a group of people coming together and making their community more healthy or more vital or more beautiful or more just by saying to people who have a great idea and are doing work in the community, I believe in you. And so we are looking to grow. And if you are one of those people, if you're listening to this broadcast and you think, wow, I'd like to do something like that in our community, get in touch with me at Bread for the Journey International. You can find us online, breadforthejourney.org. Give us a call or write to me, and we'll talk a little bit about what you might want to do in your community. It might be fun to work together. So now that I've shared with you who we are at Bread for the Journey, I'd like to go back to the interview and speak a bit with Katie Pearson, founder of Tabitha Farm, Urban Homestead and Community Garden in Kalamazoo, Michigan. Thank you, Katie, for joining us.
Thank you.
Glad to have you here.
I'm glad to be here.
Yeah. So Tabitha Farm, I'm just going to, instead of saying the whole name, I'm going to say just Tabitha Farm when I refer to it in this interview.
Sure.
is a farm that sits on 2 acres of land in an urban area of Kalamazoo. As I understand it, you at one time had lived in subsidized housing before you purchased a foreclosed home on 2 acres of land. Why don't we start with you telling us a little bit about living in subsidized housing and how that experience perhaps inspired you to feel brave enough to purchase a home on 2 acres of land and turn it into a local urban farm?
Well, I'll start off by saying that it was my dream since I was a little girl to own my own home and build a home and even work on land. I come from a long line of farmers. And as an adult, I found myself with 4 children mm-hmm. and a husband, and we ended up living in subsidized housing. It was kind of when the economy just kind of took a downturn, and with 4 children to support, it was very, very difficult. And my husband at the time, had a hard time, kept getting laid off from jobs. And, you know, especially here in Michigan, it's been really hard.
Yeah.
So we were, definitely fortunate enough to have help, to have housing. So I think that's important to state. However, I'm a pretty free spirit, and I found living in subsidized housing to be pretty oppressive. The management was pretty oppressive, and I think that that from the outside, I think there's a certain I think that people make assumptions about the people that live in subsidized housing, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. those people are treated as such. And I felt that's how we were treated, and it was really good incentive for me to get on the ball and make homeownership a reality.
mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Who did you reach out to first, and how was it that you ended up getting this foreclosed home?
Well, there's a great nonprofit organization here in Kalamazoo called KNHS, which stands for Kalamazoo Neighborhood Housing Services. It's a nonprofit. It's been around for over 30 years. And they are an urban revitalization program, and they specifically help lower-income families become homeowners uh-huh. in the downtown area of Kalamazoo. Mm-hmm. Kalamazoo used to be a paper mill town, and we're also a college town now. And so we have a lot of big, beautiful old houses that are kind of falling to disrepair. A lot of them are student housing. And so KNHS gets families into these homes to turn them back into single family homes mm-hmm. and to revitalize these urban centers. And so I reached out to them as a young mother. I believe when I first started taking the home ownership classes at KNHS, I was pregnant with my 4th, and I ended up having her and then continued with the classes when she was a newborn. And so I was, I was in that program for a little while. And basically they taught me how a mortgage works. And, mm-hmm. and so I went through the program, and it took a little while. And then eventually I got to a point where I was able to actually look for homes because I got pre-approved for a certain amount. And then this particular home that I found, the Tabitha Farm, I was actually online, and I found it on a real estate database, and And then I came to visit this home, and it was empty. The second I came onto the property, I knew instantly that this was going to be my home. And
oh, beautiful.
You know, the neighborhood's pretty rough. It is a lower income neighborhood, and it's, you know, I think the people around here are pretty marginalized, and I think that my vision to create this communal growing space and green space for the neighborhood, it was kind of a no-brainer for me from the very beginning.
I understand that you, in 1998, had traveled overseas with a program called Woofer that taught you about organic farming. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that, so that gives us kind of a picture of what you had in terms of knowledge going into this foreclosed property with a dream and a vision?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I've worked really hard to kind of get to this point. And before I had children, and before, you know, times were kind of tough for us financially, I did a lot of traveling, and I did this WOOF program, Willing Workers and Organic Farms, and basically I worked on small family organic farms and hopped from farm to farm in Europe. And there I gained a lot of knowledge about permaculture, organic farming, animal husbandry, and a big skill that I picked up was I ended up apprenticing a carpenter in Ireland for several months. And then once I came back to the States, I actually went to a carpentry school in Boston called the North Bennett Street School. So, you know, becoming a homeowner and being able to maintain the acreage and the land, you know, I came with a certain skill set, and that was, you know, I had worked as a carpenter for several years, and then the organic farming experience.
So the combined, you really need both of those skills combined if you're building this farm, don't you?
Well, you know, I think so. It certainly helped me. I've always been pretty, ever since I was a kid, I was always building things. I was the little girl in the dress with the skinned knees outside building the fort and playing with my Barbies inside the fort that I built, you know? So there's always been a balance of femininity and, you know, getting things done.
Getting really physical things done.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's great. That's great. So I imagine your kids are involved. Now, here you are, you know, so many years later. In 1998, that was before any of your kids were born?
Yeah, I have four children. I have 8-year-old identical twin boys, and they were born in 2003. And then I have a 6-year-old boy, and I have a 4-year-old girl.
Right, right, right. So you had this experience back in 98. You come back to the States, you get married, you have these kids, and now suddenly here you are in this. We'll just sort of jump forward. You obviously went through the process, got pre-approved, and was able to get this home. Was the house livable when you bought it?
Kind of.
Have you done improvements to the house, or is all the work you've been doing outside in the farm?
Well, yeah, it's kind of been a balance between the house and the land and the farm aspect of things. I've done a lot of work on the house, yes. It was livable when I moved in, but most of the improvements I've made have been kind of facade-type improvements. But most of the work, really, like the transformation of this property has been mostly with the outside, because the outside when I started was just a grassy lawn, and so now it's actually like a working farm with you know, a giant garden space, and we have chickens and a fruit orchard, and so yeah, that's most of the work has been in that.
Is outside. And I imagine your kids have been very involved in this process all along the way. What a fun thing for kids to do.
Absolutely. Well, my children and quite a few of the neighborhood children as well.
Right, right. We're going to talk about that in the second segment. We're going to break in just a few minutes. But first, I wanted to ask you something. I'd been reading up a little bit about your history. And one of the things that I read, it said that you were a student at Western Michigan University. Are you still a student, or are those days done? Are you?
Oh, no, I'm still a student. Basically, when I bought the home, and I went back to school around the same time, and I went back to work as well. So I did all of that around the same time because when I was in my early 20s, I went to carpentry school, like I said, so I never had a formal university education. So I felt, because of the work that I'm getting into here at Tabitha Farm, I felt having the credential of a bachelor's degree, even beyond getting my master's, would be beneficial for me.
Well, I'm finding listening to you that you're really quite the woman. You know, here you are. I mean, you're so accomplished in so many areas, and on top of doing what you're doing in the garden and raising a family of four and buying this house and making it livable for your family, you're in school and trying to move forward with your life. I'm incredibly impressed.
Thanks.
So we're going to take a break in a minute. And when we come back, what I'd like now to talk about is the farm itself. I want you to paint a picture for us of what the farm looks like, what you're doing, what you're growing, you know, even the chickens, and talk a bit about what it's like to be in this urban community, maybe a bit of a rough and tumble neighborhood, and what it's like for the other kids in the community to have this resource at their fingertips. So to our listeners, please come back. We're going to have an exciting second segment here with Katie Pearson. Thank you so much for listening.
Be sure to friend us on Facebook. You can do it right now. Visit facebook.com/Voice America or search for us at keyword Voice America.
Are you happy with the management and leadership style of your organization? Do you think it could use some improvement? No matter the level of leadership at your organization, you'll be sure to learn something new when you tune in to ADESIS Methodology for Collaborative Management for Exceptional Results with Dr. Ishak ADESIS. Through a unique lecture and interview format, we'll bring you ideas, questions, and answers that will help you run any organization, whether for-profit or not. Listen every Saturday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on Voice America Business.
Tune in to the Empowered Healer Show with Dr. Susan Allison. Our program will help you to heal yourself, support those around you, and enhance your work and your relationships. Healing can be physical, emotional, or spiritual, and it can be personal or collective for the healing of our planet. Dr. Allison and her guests will offer methods of healing that will go beyond your life and reach the lives of others. Tune in to the Empowered Healer Show, airing live every Thursday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern, on the Voice America 7th Wave channel.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com. You are tuned in to Bread for the Journey, ordinary people doing extraordinary deeds, with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. If you have a question or comment about the program, or have an idea for a person you would like featured on a future program, please send an email to bfjradio@gmail.com. That's bfjradio@gmail.com. And now, back to Bread for the Journey.
Welcome back, and here I am, Mariana Cacciatore, speaking with Katie Pearson, founder of Tabitha Farm Urban Homestead and Community Garden in Kalamazoo, Michigan. Our Bread for the Journey chapter in Kalamazoo, Bread for the Journey of Southwest Michigan, had given Katie a grant for Tabitha Farms, and so after meeting her, I thought she would be a fun person to have on the show. So I've invited her. Our first segment has been sort of about how she got herself into this 2-acre piece of property in urban Kalamazoo. And now we're going to talk about the property itself and what she's doing. Maybe you can sort of, I don't know, visually paint a picture for us of what the farm looks like, Katie.
Sure. Well, I'll start off by visually painting you a picture of what the neighborhood looks like, and then we'll move to the farm.
Great. Sounds perfect. So
Tabitha Farm is located on the south side of downtown Kalamazoo, and we're kind of in this funny part of the neighborhood. We're next to a neighborhood that has a very strong, big neighborhood association, but we are not part of that neighborhood. And then we are on the bottom of a very steep hill, and on the top of the hill is another neighborhood that's kind of the ritzy, kind of more well-to-do part of Kalamazoo. So if you can imagine, we're just this little kind of sliver of a neighborhood, very tiny, that is really on the literal backside or bottom of the hill of this well-to-do area. And then we don't really have much of a neighborhood association or any kind of, neighborhood organization. Uh-huh. So, the formation of Tabitha Farm has kind of organically become, in a way, our neighborhood's, part, our neighborhood's association, which
sort of
is
like a community center.
Exactly. And it's not officially in any way, but
but unofficially. And, sometimes that's more important than the other, you know?
Yeah.
Because it happens organically. It happens the way people move. That's where they're growing. That's where they find themselves gathered.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And that's exactly how this farm is developed. And so down on the corner, which is, I'm actually looking out my window, I can see right now on the corner, we usually on average have quite a few young men hanging out. And there is quite a gang presence here. And there are quite a few young children too. So, before when I first moved here, a lot of the kids would just hang out on the corner. Mm-hmm. There wasn't really a lot to do. It's also kind of a busy corner traffic-wise, too, so it's not very safe. And so my home is right along the street, and then behind my home is the 2 acres of land which make up Tabitha Farm. And it's kind of hidden. I've put up some signs to make it a little bit more accessible. But the children have definitely found us, and we have on average probably maybe 6 to 12 kids every day during the summer that come throughout the day to come hang out and play. And literally they just play. And, right. And that's the point of this space, is that it's a green space where the kids can come and play and be children and not miniature adults and not be around adult situations either.
Right. I was reading some of the things about you. You actually did some things to help make that happen, building some swing sets and having play equipment right there in the midst of the garden. Is that true?
Yeah. For my own children, but also for the neighborhood kids, like I said before, I have a lot of carpentry skills. So I've built the play area myself, and I actually have built it with a lot of salvaged material.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I did order some play equipment as well, and then we have a flock of chickens as well, and that's a big draw for the kids.
I bet it
they
is.
They love the chickens.
It's like going to a petting zoo or something like that, only it's real. It's right in the neighborhood. Yeah.
And when they get out, the kids, help me gather them, and it's even come to the point where actually on a few occasions some of the neighborhood kids have come over with animals that they've found injured.
Oh.
And thinking that maybe I could help.
They see it as a safe haven. They see it as a safe haven. Yeah. That's beautiful. That's really beautiful. So here we have some kids who have options in their neighborhood. They can begin to join hands with sort of rough and tumble gang activity, or they can play in the garden. Which one do they choose?
Well, and I think that, you know, it's important that I'm not, I think that the young men in the neighborhood, I feel like sometimes that's the only option that they have. And I live with them here. I don't look down or I don't, you know, I really try hard not to be very judgmental, because really, I feel like our neighborhood is marginalized. And I think that, you know, when these young men were children at some point, and, you know, they just haven't had as many opportunities, and I'm just trying to create more opportunity for the kids, that the young children that are here now.
Do you find that any of the older ones find their way into the garden, or do they act protective of what you've created there?
A little bit of both, actually. I think at first, you know, there was a lot of mistrust about me and what I was doing here. But I've been here for 3 years now, and the accomplishments have just been, it's just been relationship building and getting to know people. And I think that there has been some protectiveness, which I've been pretty surprised about. But then also, I've had some of the young fathers come over with their young children to play with the chickens or to learn about them. And then some of the open houses, I've had some of the older fellas come over and express some just kind of curiosity.
Right. Are you sharing food that you harvest with people in the community?
Oh, absolutely. Last summer, some of the children that came over, if they helped me out in the garden, I would send them home with some eggs or some popcorn or with some tomatoes or something. And it's been pretty informal like that. With the kids, I've really tried hard not to have a structured programming. I think that, you know, the kids are in school for the school year, and a lot of the kids do after school programs. So they're in school all day. They're not getting a lot of outdoor play time. And then in the summer, a lot of them do summer school or they have programmed summer camps. I've tried really hard and specifically to make this a very informal space so the kids can come over and play almost like it's like their own backyard. Because when I was a kid, that's what I did.
Right. Me too. I lived in a two-family home. We were upstairs, and my grandparents, who were Italian, lived downstairs. And they didn't speak English, and I didn't speak Italian. But my grandfather was a farmer. And we had a backyard, a side yard, and a front yard. And he took the backyard wall to wall on all four sides and filled it with vegetables. And that was where I hung out. That was where we communicated, and we didn't even need a common language. We communicated through gardening.
Wow.
Yeah. It was very powerful for me.
And that's exactly what I'm doing here with a lot of the kids. And you know, if they lose interest, they can also play basketball. I have a basketball court. I have the play area, like I said. I also have a soccer area now with a soccer net and soccer ball.
Mm-hmm. So it's fun. It's like it's a real playground. It's a safe haven for them to come and play.
Yeah, and it certainly hasn't been without challenges, too. I mean, it's been a learning and growing process for me, too.
What have some of those challenges been?
Well, I think, you know, when you, like, sometimes in the summer when I have all my windows open, there's a lot of night activity, a lot of noise, and you know, my children are trying to sleep, and sometimes, you know, there could be several cop cars right outside the window flashing the lights or people screaming, you know, a lot of yelling, a lot of screaming, a lot of kind of almost desperation. And that can be wearing, as much as optimistic as I try to be. It can be very wearing. And I have to remember that, you know, that people are kind of can be a product of their environment, and that it's not necessarily their fault. Like if people are screaming or they're really angry, it's not like they can just go and take a yoga class and chill out, you know,
right,
they can go and, you know, go have a cup of tea at the local coffee shop. I mean, it's a different world. And so that's been a big challenge for me, is just understanding kind of the history of neighborhoods and people, and, you know, understanding that people are dealing with a lot, and to try and be not judgmental and be very open and understanding.
Inviting them in so that they begin to see that there's another way of being in the world.
Sure.
Begin to take advantage of new options. It's all about exposure. I just think you're one of the most courageous people I have ever met. I'm so impressed with your work, Katie.
That really means a lot. Thank you.
You're welcome. We have another program here in the Bay Area. We've given our Bread for the Journey chapters around the country, have given to garden programs all over. And there's one in particular where I volunteer here in the San Francisco Bay Area. It's in Oakland, and it's called Casa de Paz, House of Peace. And it is housed right in the middle of a very rough and tumble neighborhood in Oakland called the Fruitvale District. And they leave the doors to their house open. They have this big garden that they invite people anytime to come and work in. And one of the people who owns, there's a few houses centered around a garden there, and now they're expanding it. They bought another house, and they're going to put an industrial kitchen in it, and they're going to invite some of the young men who live in the neighborhood who, you know, because of where they live, have limited, and who they are, have limited opportunities. They're going to invite some of them to come live in that house and begin to teach them how to work the garden and then to harvest the food. It's really quite an inspiring event. And as you were talking, I was dreaming of bringing you out here to meet them, because I think you would benefit from their experience, and they would benefit from your experience, and it could be just a win-win all the way around.
Oh yeah, that would be amazing. It sounds amazing what they're doing. That's basically what I'm trying to do too.
It is. It's really similar, and in their house they have a loft space that was an attic that got refinished, and it's just empty. They don't have any furniture up there, and it's got beautiful windows, and they do yoga and they do meditation, and they invite people from the neighborhood in to join them to do that in the mornings. And so they're really making a change in the neighborhood. It's really quite a beautiful thing. And like I said, as I was listening to you, I was thinking of a way to bring both of you together, because I think that would be beneficial for, as the Buddhists say, all beings benefit. So, Katie, we're going to take a break right now. And when we come back, I'd like to talk with you a little bit about the future. What do you see? What are your dreams and visions about where you'd like to go with Tabitha Farms and beyond? You know, you're getting your degree, and, you know, as we've listened to you, it's sort of been this story, you know, this really incredible story of being knocked down a bit during this big economic crisis that we had in 2008, and, you know, with four kids and a husband, finding your way out of that into what is a really beautiful lifestyle that is not only of service to you and your children, but to many people in your community. I think it's a very inspiring story. So now I'd like to hear, and I think our listeners might like to hear, about any future dreams you have. So to our listeners, please stay with us. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network live wherever you go, on iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
If you're a golf enthusiast and looking for some great golf properties in the desert Southwest, you'll want to make the Golf Realty Network your weekly stop. Hosted by Jane and Al Anderson, the Golf Realty Network is all about living where you play, on the golf side. You'll hear from the course pros and vendors, while the real estate side will bring you the top agents and brokers who know how to market or find your golf community home. Tune in to the Golf Realty Network, Wednesdays at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern on Voice America Variety, and rebroadcast weekly on Voice America Sports.
Family caregivers face some tough challenges every day in caring for a partner, parent, child, sibling, friend, neighbor, or even coworker. You are there to provide the care that these people need after everyone else has gone home. Family Caregivers Unite with Dr. Gordon Atherley will provide you with a social networking experience. You'll hear from experts and others who are experiencing the same things, and together you will promote a common cause. Tune in to Family Caregivers Unite, live every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific, on Voice America Variety.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to Bread for the Journey, ordinary people doing extraordinary deeds, with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. If you have a question or comment about the program, or have an idea for a person you would like featured on a future program, please send an email to bfjradio@gmail.com. That's bfjradio@gmail.com. And now, back to Bread for the Journey.
Welcome back, and we're here talking to Katie Pearson, founder of Tabitha Farm Urban Homestead and Community Garden in Kalamazoo, Michigan. So we have been talking to you about the farm, and now I'd like to maybe direct the conversation a bit to some of your dreams for the future. What is it that you imagine that you might be doing in the next few years and beyond? Katie, let's just begin the conversation with that question.
Sure. Well, first of all, I want to tell you that I one of the life changes that I had happen in the last, well, since I've been here doing what I'm doing, I actually got a divorce. So I've been doing this actually as a single mother. And I think that's important to note, because it's been a big driving force for me, because I haven't had a lot of help, and I feel like it's even so much more important to provide this type of lifestyle for my children, who might, you know, otherwise miss out on opportunities themselves, because, you know, growing up in a single parent household. And also, I actually got remarried this year.
I'm sorry, but now I'll say congratulations.
It's okay. I got remarried this year, and we are actually expecting another one at the end of August. So that's kind of a big life moment there that's happening in the near future.
Right.
So I just
congratulations.
Wanted to, thank you. the future. I need to finish school. I'm going to be taking an independent study this fall, at right after the baby's born. And the independent study is on urban community agriculture. And my major at Western Michigan University is Africana Studies, which is Black Studies. And so I'm doing this program, but I'm kind of incorporating it into what I'm doing personally here at the farm as well.
Mm-hmm.
So this independent study is really important this fall. Because it's on what I'm doing, but then also what's happening in Detroit and then many other cities around the U.S., like in the Peace Garden you were talking about in the Bay Area. And so basically, I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing for now while I finish school. And then In the near future, I'd like to improve the play area a little bit, just, you know, add some swings and kind of build on that a little bit more so there's more play options for the kids. And then once I graduate, you know, I've realized running this farm that I've had to be pretty open to the ebbs and flows of life and being kind of flexible, because I had a goal and I had a vision, but it hasn't, you know, it's kind of changed along the way. And so, knowing that when I graduate, I kind of have a vision of either, getting a job in the community, like a real kind of job, where I'm working with community members and I can incorporate it with the farm somehow, or going to grad school to, continuous schooling to get that higher degree. But it kind of just depends on, how the cards fall, if you, but yeah, cause I've worked with a few community organizations already and, I've thought, you know, that would be a really great place to work as far as like kind of a 9-to-5 type job. But we'll kind of see at this point.
Wouldn't it be lovely if you were able to, just like you said, incorporate some kind of, employment that, you know, that has a steady paycheck and at the same time allows you to be in that community, make a difference in that community, gain the trust of the people in that community and begin changing the whole, I don't know, feeling of the community that you're living in by the work that you're doing in the farm, to actually be supported in that way? Because I don't know, I just think that Kalamazoo is very lucky to have a person like you who's right in the heart of all of that with your family and your kids, and you're beginning to develop trust by community members. And wouldn't it be beautiful if somebody really recognized that and supported you in doing an even better job of just what you're doing?
Absolutely. And so that's kind of my goal at this point. There are quite a few organizations here in Kalamazoo, great organizations doing great work. We have the Kalamazoo County Land Bank, which takes plots around downtown Kalamazoo that maybe once had a house on them and that the house was condemned and tore down, and even some plots with houses on them, and kind of gets homeowners to purchase those properties to beautify them with either a community garden or some kind of beautification. So that's another great organization. We also have another organization called Fair Food Matters, who is all about kind of food education and food justice, similar to what I'm doing, but they're kind of a big organization here in Kalamazoo, and they support a lot of other small little programs around Kalamazoo, as well as me. I've actually gotten a grant from them before. So there's just a lot of great organizations that I would love to either work for or, you know, just continue working with in the capacity that I have been so far.
You talked about earlier about having a couple of open houses. What did those open houses look like, and what were you trying to accomplish or achieve by doing them?
Well, I was having an open house twice a year. I've knocked it down to once a year just to make it easier on myself. And usually I had one in the spring and one in the fall. Usually the one in the fall, I didn't really draw too much attention just because people were in school and kind of it was busy. But the one in the spring, I actually just had an open house a few weeks ago. Basically, it's just an opportunity for community members here in the neighborhood to check out the farm. Also for friends and family to come support what I'm doing. And then also other community members that may maybe not necessarily live in this community to see what's going on and to kind of put Southside on the map as far as a neighborhood. Because I think we're, like I said before, I think sometimes we're kind of forgotten over here. And then basically I'll usually have some entertainment. I have a lot of musician friends and I'll have somebody come. And we usually serve food that has been prepared from the garden or from local farmers. So this a few weeks ago, we had rhubarb crisp, and we had a raw asparagus salad, and what else? We had a regular salad with greens, and these were all either vegetables from Tabitha Farm or local artists. Local farmers.
They're artists in their own way, right?
Yeah, and that's important too, because we had this last open house, I had at least 15 kids from the neighborhood, young kids, probably ranging in age from 5 to 12, come over, and we did an herbal walk with the kids, where we walked around the farm and we pointed out the wild edibles and the herbs and showed them what we put in the salad, and basically, you know, this is the food that you eat and this is where it grows. Mm-hmm. And so they made that connection. That was a lot of fun.
Have any of the kids been helping you in the garden itself? I know you have this play structures there, so they're playing in and around. Have any of them sort of taken the next step in wanting to learn how to plant things and grow things?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And like I said, it's kind of been informal. It's usually just out there.
Right. Yeah, that's the best way.
Planting things, and then they kind of show up and show some interest, and I just have them do what they want to do and help me out and I have everything either in raised beds or kind of logged off, just so they don't walk on important things growing. And
right.
They definitely contribute, even if it's just planting one little thing or several seeds. You know, every kid is different. Every kid has a different threshold of what they like to do and what they're interested in.
Right. Part of it for me was being able to pick things in the garden, but I can't tell you how many green beans I picked, you know, off of the vines and just ate right then and there. And my grandfather used to grow something called kohlrabi, and he used to he always had a knife in his pocket, you know, a little pocket. And he'd pull it out and he'd pull off one of those and he'd take the, it has a pretty strong, heavy duty peeling on it, but then he'd cut a piece of this crunchy inner that was kind of peppery, but crisp and watery as well, like a jicama a little bit. Are you familiar with kohlrabi?
Yeah. I don't grow any of it, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I just have these pungent memories of hanging out in the garden with him and being able to eat right from food, you know, that we pull, pulling carrots out of the, you know, bringing them over to the hose and, you know, hosing them down and getting all the dirt off and then just eating them right then and there. Do you do that with some of the kids?
Oh, yeah. Well, one of the important aspects of Tabitha Farm is we have a fruit orchard and many hundreds of black raspberry bushes. And I just planted about 13 blueberry bushes 2 years ago. So those are getting bigger. But basically, in a few weeks here, how it is every year is the kids will come over and just have purple mouths from eating the berries right off the vine. And I show them, you know, these are the berries you want to eat. And these are the berries you don't want to eat. That's right. Important too.
Right.
And you know, one of the really fun parts of the open house was, I had made a stinging nettle, a stinging nettle, creamy artichoke dip. Uh-huh. When you cook stinging nettle, the nettle becomes inert. It doesn't sting anymore. Mm-hmm. But it's highly nutritious and full of tons of protein, and it's a really good substitute for spinach. And so I made this, and the kids were eating it. They were like, "Oh, this is so good. It's so delicious." And then my friend and I brought him over to the nettle patch and we're like, yeah, this is where this comes from. And they just got a really big kick out of the fact that this plant like kind of hurt when you touch the leaves or.
Right. It doesn't look appetizing in the leaves.
Right. Well, and then one of the things that we taught them was how to touch the plant with intention and how to pull the leaves off so they don't sting you. And that's part of the education too, is teaching them about kind of having a balance with Mother Nature. You know, this is a weed that maybe if you walked past it really fast, it would sting you. But if you tried to touch it with intention and care and not, you know, destroy it, it'll actually not sting you and then give you food to eat.
It's really, these are lessons that these kids will carry with them for the rest of their lives. And the fact that they're given to them in a way that is sort of informal and casual, woven into just playing in and amongst and around them on play equipment, is beautiful. I think it's ideal.
Thanks.
Yeah, I really appreciate the intention with which you've done the work that you're doing. Yeah, thanks. I think it's really quite beautiful. And so we've got a few minutes before closing, and I hadn't mentioned this to you ahead of time, but if there's any experience that you've had with any one child on the property, and if there's any story to tell, it might be a nice way to wrap up our interview. But if you don't, we can go to another question. I don't want to put you on the spot.
No, yeah, that's fine. Yeah, like I said before, part of this process, this learning process for me, and part of the growth of Tabitha Farm is that it's all been all about relationships. And, you know, I'm not just this person coming in here trying to make a difference and going somewhere else at the end of the day. Right. I live here, and this is my neighborhood. This is my home. This is where I'm raising my children. And so it's been really important for me to reach out to community members and my neighbors, getting to know people. And one kid in particular, he frequents here quite a bit, and he's been here since the beginning. He hasn't been shy, that's for sure. And you know, he's a pretty tough kid. He's been through it. You know, his mm-hmm. dad's in prison, and some of the stories he tells me are pretty hard to hear. I'll just to put it mildly. So he's a tough cookie. But I'll tell you, when he first started coming over here, he kind of had this swagger. He kind of had this toughness. His chest was always puffed out. The way he spoke was kind of really disrespectful. And since he's come over here more and more and more, he's actually shared meals with us. I've made dinner with him. He's eaten dinner with us. He'll just come over and hang out. His actual physical demeanor has changed. It's gone from this little, this little punk to this kid. He's like a normal kid.
I am so touched and amazed, and I love hearing this story, and I think it's a really fabulous way to end, and we get our listeners thinking a little bit about what that might be, even on a larger scale, of how many kids could show up in this neighborhood. And I just want to thank you so much, Katie. I really appreciate the work that you're doing.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. And to our listening audience, Bread for the Journey is a nonprofit organization that could use your support. If you find a place in your heart to make a financial contribution, either to Bread for the Journey or Tabitha Farms, you can go to our website at breadforthejourney.org. If we all pitch in a little bit, we can change the world. And if you write to me, I can put you in touch with Katie. And I close today, as I do with every show, may all beings be happy. May all beings be safe. May all beings be free. See you next week.
We hope our program inspired you this week. Please join Mariana Cacciatore for another edition of Bread for the Journey next Saturday at noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.